Okay. We're having a nice Rosh Hashanah. And, we're now looking towards Yom Kippur and Ben Sukkot. So, God willing, next week I plan to be here as long as everyone else is available next week before Sukkot. We still have a day before Erev Yom Tov, so hopefully we'll all be. If not, then let me know, I guess. But assuming everyone's available, we'll have a normal class next week. I'm going to continue what we spoke about last week. Last week we were discussing examples of tshuva you find in the Gemara. And last week we focused on a primary example of Rabbi Elazar ben Dordaya, who's one of the most extreme cases of tshuva that you find in the Gemara. I want to focus today on another three or four different individuals you find in the Gemara who did tshuva and try to learn lessons from the tshuva they did. Obviously, you know, heading towards Yom Kippur, we're in the Seres Mitzvah right now. The theme of this week is tshuva. We should be focusing on ourselves as to how we can take those steps we've been thinking about to grow and change and be ready for Yom Kippur to actually make those commitments. So the more examples we find and lessons we find really help us know what we can do with ourselves. So the first example I want to bring is about a person named Yossi ben Meshisa. Yossi ben Meshisa. His story is actually, it's alluded to in a few different places, but the story is brought in full in the Midrash in Yalkut Shimoni. And the place where you find the reference to the story is an interesting place. When Yaakov comes in to steal the brachos from Esav, from Yitzchak, to go get the brachos from Yitzchak, and he poses as Esav. So his father Yitzchak was a little bit, concerned, something is a little strange here, maybe it's not Esav, maybe it's somebody disguised as Esav. And it says, Vayorach esreach begadav. It says that he smelled the scent of his clothing. So the Gemara makes an interesting drasha. It explains that phrase to mean, it says, don't read it reach begadav. It's not the scent of his clothing, it's reach bogdav, the scent of his traitors. And traitors. Like a traitor, like somebody who's rebelling against God. The traitors of the Jews. Because the word bogade is to deceive. To go against someone else, bogade. We say it in the Vidui, but bagadnu, right? We have been treacherous. We have been traitors to you, Hashem. So the rabbis say, don't read it that he smelled the scent of his clothing, begadav. Read it that he smelled the scent of the traitors of Israel. The people in Jewish history who are traitors to their own religion. And the point being made in this Midrash is that even those people amongst us who are traitors, who go against God, who go against our nation, they still have a beautiful aroma on the inside. And what's this story? So it actually quotes two examples. We're going to talk about one of them. The example that I want to discuss is a person, Yosef ben Meshisa, or Yosef Meshisa. Yosef Meshisa was somebody who, when the enemies came to destroy the Beis HaMikdash, to destroy the temple, they wanted to go in and take all of the different vessels. But they were scared to go in first. So they said, let us find the Jew who's going to go in first and pull out the vessels. We'll see what happens to him. No, he'll be the trial run. If he comes out alive, we'll know it's safe to go in, basically. So they looked around to find a Jew who'd go in. And Yosef Meshisa said, okay, I'll do it. So you see how he's a traitor. He's the one who's willing to go in on behalf of these terrible, terrible people who are there to destroy the temple. And he's going to go in. He himself is going to steal something from the temple itself. A terrible, terrible sin. A terrible thing. And they said, whatever you take, you can keep. Now, that'll be the deal. So you go in first, and you can take anything you want. And whatever you take out of the temple, you can keep. So he went in, and he saw the beautiful golden menorah. He said, oh, I'll take that. So he walks out with the menorah. So then and I'm not sure we're talking here about the first temple. I'm not clear. I don't know if it's Babylonians or the Romans in the story right now. It's not clear in terms of this Midrash. But the army that was there to destroy the Beis HaMikdash, they said, it's not typical for an individual to use such a beautiful menorah. So we'll keep that. You go and get something else. So they don't want to let him use that menorah. It's too nice to have an individual. That belongs to the government. That's where it should go. So they said, you go in one more time, and then whatever you take out the second time, you can keep. So he said, no. He said, I'm not going in. And he said a famous line. He said, Dai shichasti lalokai pam achas. It's enough I angered my God one time. I should anger him a second time? So at this point, if you realize that this person was willing to go in and steal vessels from the Beis HaMikdash, he was on a pretty low level in terms of what it means to be a Jew. He had given in to the enemies. No, he had, whether it was that the fear overtook him, the money overtook him, he did something that certainly was a very, very treacherous act. After the first time, he said, I can't do it again. You know, one time I did it, second time not. So what happened? It says that the enemies got upset with him now, and they stuck him onto, they tortured him to death, basically. They stuck him onto some sort of table carpenters use to sand down wood, and essentially they killed him that way, in a very, very gruesome and torturous way. And he died, on his lips, he said, Vai dechasti lebari. He said, Oi, that I've angered my creator. And he died with those words on his lips. So he's someone who definitely did tshuva. He did a terrible, terrible avera, a terrible sin, and he found tshuva within, and after doing it the first time, he said, I can't do it again, and he gave up his life for it. So I'm putting out a few things here. Number one is the headline on this whole story is this verse, V'yarach Hasriach Begadav, that he smelled the scent of his clothing. Don't read it as Begadav, read it as Bogdav, the scent of the traitors of the Jews. Because the point is that every Jew has within goodness. And on the outside, you don't really perceive it. But even those people who are Jewish, but they seem to be living lives against God, deep down, there's a spark of God within. There's holiness. There's the neshama inside. And that's essentially good. And even though on the outside, they're doing terrible, terrible things, on the inside, if you smell, you know, when you smell something, you know, something here smells fishy. You know, you don't see it, but something is a little bit, beneath the surface, there's something here which is different than you see on the outside. So if you smell our traitors, if you smell our rebels, still, deep down, you sense there is holiness, there's sanctity, there is devotion to God, deep down in the person. So he had that within. Even though on the outside he did a really heinous act, on the inside he had goodness. So sometimes, you know, we'll do something wrong, and when we do it, we don't think about it as being so terrible. But once we do it afterwards, the pain and the regret that we have are so, so deep, and they're so difficult, that changes us. The first time he said, okay, I'll go in, no problem. He didn't even second guess himself. But once he did it, and he came out, and he felt, well, look what I just did. I just went in, and I stole something from God's Beis HaMikdash. Is there anything worse a Jew can do? Any more of a treacherous act? At that point, he lost it. He said, how could I go so low? Look what became of me. When we sometimes, for us as well, you know, we look at our actions, and before we do them, you know, we might feel bad, might not feel bad. We go ahead and do the act, which is inappropriate. But afterwards, just the pain, the regret, the guilt get to us. And we say to ourselves, how stupid was I? How did I do that? How did I say that? Why did I act in that way? And that moves us and changes us. You know, he died within feelings of tshuva because he looked at his act and said, I angered God. Look what I just did. How could I do such a thing? And he died a martyr. He died someone, kadosh, you know, very, very, in a very sacred way. So one lesson for us, I think, from his story is just reflect upon our own actions, reflect upon ourselves, and look at things that we've done. And we should be able to say to ourselves, how did I sink so low? How did I do that? And that is not a bad feeling because that moves us to change. Feelings of guilt, you know, being overly, feeling overly guilty is hard to live with. That's not a positive thing. But the sense of shame, a sense of guilt to some level is very, very positive because that drives us, we don't like living with that sense. And that makes us change. Before the action, we didn't feel guilty, but we didn't do it yet. Once we do it, we feel so guilty, that makes us become better people. So Yosef Meshissa, he felt that sense of shame, that sense of guilt about what he did, and it changed him to the point that he was willing to give his life to sanctify God's name. And that was a tremendous change that he made, and something that we can all relate to. So that's one example.
Something we can
all relate to, as well in our own lives. Another example, a very famous person in the Gemara, Rabbi Shimon ben Lakish, who we refer to as by the title Reish Lakish, that's the, you know, his, I guess his nickname, Reish Lakish.
Yeah, first was
Reish Lakish was somebody who we look at in the Gemara as really one of the most often quoted sages in the Gemara. He and Rabbi Yochanan are constantly debating back and forth throughout the entire Talmud. He's somebody that we look to so often for his different quotes in the Gemara. He's somebody held up to be one of our greatest sages ever. But he didn't have such a savory background. Reish Lakish, the Gemara tells us, used to be a bandit. He was a robber. Not just any bandit, he was like the head bandit. You know, he was like the head of the entire mob. That's who he was. And it's unclear in terms of the commentaries. It could be that he began religious, he became a robber, and then he came back. Or some say that he was born not religious, and then he came as a Baal Tshuva. Two different ways to understand his story. But how did he do Tshuva? At what point did he drop his criminal lifestyle and become a great sage? What happened? So the Gemara tells us, this is in Maseches Bava Metzia, the Gemara tells us that one time Rabbi Yochanan was bathing in the Yarden, in the Jordan River. And Reish Lakish, who at that time was a bandit, he saw him, and he jumped into the river, which I assume he wanted to go and rob him or something. That's what I'm assuming. Doesn't say what he wanted to do. So Rabbi Yochanan sees this bandit with tremendous strength, you know, jumping a tremendous distance into the river, and he tells him, Chel Chel Dereisa, with all that power and strength you have, that should be devoted to Torah. Why are you devoting all your strength to crime? That's what he tells him. So he responds back, Shufrach Lenashi. He says, you're such a beautiful person, Rabbi Yochanan. Your beauty should be used for women. Right? Go and attract women with your beauty. So we have, you know, he says, use all your strength for Torah. He says, no, use your beauty for women. Forget about this Torah stuff. Rabbi Yochanan was known in the Gemara to be an extremely beautiful person. Talks about the light emanating from his face. He was known to be one of the most beautiful people out there. So Reish Lakish saw the beauty of this person and said, why are you wasting it? Go out and attract women with your beauty. So he says, if you think I'm beautiful, well, why don't you do tshuva and you can marry my sister? Because she's really beautiful. Right? That's what Reish Lakish tells Reish Lakish. And she's more beautiful than me. So Reish Lakish says, really? Okay. So he says, okay, I'll do tshuva. That's a good deal. And he, at that point, committed to become, you know, a Baal Tshuva, to drop his criminal lifestyle and to start learning Torah. So it says at that point, he tried jumping back over the river to collect his stuff, and he couldn't do it. He already became weaker. And that's explained, you know, once the Yetzer Hara was, the Yetzer Hara within him, you know, gave him the ability to steal, gave him all that strength. Once he committed himself to Torah, so he lost that, you know, that strength for crime. So he could no longer jump in the same way. And then it says that, okay, so he learned the Torah, he learned Chumash, they taught him Mishnah, they taught him Gemara, and he became a gadol, he became a great sage. And that's the point Reish Lakish did tshuva. So we have here also some very important lessons. When he tells him, Chelcha l'areisa, no, your strength should be devoted to Torah, we could all relate to that, because all of us have talents. All of us have potential. All of us have greatness within. And the question we have to ask ourselves, am I devoting my talents, am I channeling them in the right direction or not? Yochanan sees this person who's living a criminal lifestyle. He's the head of all the bandits, but he has a lot of strength. He's powerful. He says, oh, I see power. Where should that power be used? You can use your power in so many ways. You should use your power for Torah. Put yourself into learning Torah, teaching Torah, setting an example in Torah. That's where your power should go. Everyone has greatness inside, but we don't all use our talents for the right purposes. But if we use them, we have to make sure, some of us don't use our talents. But those of us who even use our talents, we have to devote them to the right things. And that's a lesson of Rav Yochanan. So one step of tshuva is to say, let's say we're not talking about doing bad things. But to look at our lives and say, well, I have so much potential within, and it's just not being used in the right way. I know I can do so much, but either I'm using my potential for wrong things, or I'm not using it at all. And we have to say to ourselves, Chel Chel Ereisa, that all of our power needs to be devoted to God and to God's Torah, to promote God in the world. This is the lesson we find in Shema. We say the words, Bechol Me'odecha. You should love God, Bechol Me'odecha, with all of your resources, I think is a good translation for it. Which means that whatever you have, whatever, whether it be money, talent, time, energy, skill, that should be used in some way to devote yourself to God and to serve God with it. If somebody is very, very wise, so you can learn it, you can use it to learn Torah, teach Torah, inspire others. Someone's very musical, so take that musical talent and you can bring joy to others. You can inject it into davening, into a Shabbos table. There's ways you can use your musical talents to serve God. Somebody's very organized, so they can volunteer to be the shul president. They can arrange fundraisers for good organizations. In no way, right? But you can use that organizational skills that you have in order to help organizations, institutions that need it to grow and to function. There's so many ways we can use our talents to serve God. When we take these talents and we devote them only to our own purposes, so we're not devoting them the right way. So we're not talking about people as extreme as Reish Lakish. He was using his strength to rob people. But in our own lives, even if we're not using it for bad things, are we using our talents for good things or not? And that's a one step of tshuva, is not just to look at the bad, but to look at the good we have within and say, am I using it properly? Am I channeling all my energy and my time and my strength and my talents in the right way? So that's the idea of chilchel reis. If you spot different potential within, devote it to God's Torah. Devote it to serving God in some way. And imagine Yom Kippur. You know, imagine if on Yom Kippur we can say to God, you know what, I know I have a talent, and I'm not using it right now. But this year I'm going to take that talent and use it to serve you. Imagine what that would mean. It would be a very big statement to make, and it would be a bigger, big change in our lives. You know, I know that I could make others feel good, but I just don't have to take the time to speak to them, to make a phone call, to volunteer, to help out. But this year I'm going to do it. I'm going to use that talent I have, and I'm going to reach out to people. I have the ability to run different events. But I just don't do it so often. This year I'm going to take charge of one of the shul events, and I'm going to run that event because I know I'm good at it. So if we know we have these talents within, let's use those talents. And then if we were to say to God in Yom Kippur, I commit this year to using my talents in the right way, it's a very, very big statement. Another lesson, more of a side lesson, I guess, but another lesson of Reish Lakish, his initial motivation was not sincere. He was doing it to get married to Rabbi Yochanan's sister. That's why he did it. But as I mentioned before, tshuva doesn't need to come from sincere motivations necessarily. We do have a concept that even things that are lo lishma, if initially they're done in an insincere way, they do eventually bring you to doing them sincerely. So no matter what our motivation is, we want to be better people. And even impure motivations eventually lead us to pure motivations. Reish Lakish began in a way which the initial tshuva he made was not based on a pure motivation. But as time went on, he became somebody who did serve God in a very pure, sincere, genuine way, because he stepped into the Torah lifestyle. At that point, it took over him. At that point, he was able to serve God with sincerity. So that's a lesson you have from Reish Lakish. Another one, this is a lesser known story. That one's a fairly famous story. The lesser known story here is about somebody named Rabbi Yossi ben Rabbi Elazar ben Rabbi Shimon. So there's the famous Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai, is a name that many of us know. He had a son named Rabbi Eliezer. Rabbi Eliezer had a son named Rabbi Yossi. So we look at him as Rabbi Yossi, the son of Rabbi Elazar, son of Rabbi Shimon. So Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai's grandson. And there's a long story discussing Rabbi Eliezer ben Rabbi Shimon in the Gemara, who is a very, very interesting story about his lifestyle and his death. But then it talks about his child, Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai's grandson. So this is about Rabbi Yossi ben Rabbi Elazar ben Rabbi Shimon. And what's his story? So Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai was known to be one of the greatest sages of all time. He's somebody, he's the author of the Zohar, one of Rabbi Kiva's students. He was somebody we hold to be one of the greatest people to ever live. He had a son, Rabbi Eliezer, who's also a very, very great person. The Gemara says many magnificent things about him. But he had a son, Rabbi Yossi, who wasn't all that magnificent. No, Rabbi Yossi, when he was discovered, was not living such a savory lifestyle, as we call it. You know, he was living a somewhat of an immoral lifestyle. The Gemara says that after Rabbi Eliezer died, so one of the other great sages, Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi, came to visit his land. And he wanted to know, did that great tzaddik who died have any children? I'd like to meet one of his children. So they said, well, he has a son. Rabbi Eliezer has a son. His name is Rabbi Yossi. But, you know, you don't really want to meet him. You know? He's not doing such appropriate things all the time. So he goes to him, and he meets him, and he gives him smicha. He ordains him as a rabbi on the spot. And this person was very far from being a rabbi at this point. But he ordains him as a rabbi. And then he hires a tutor for him, and this person starts teaching him. Every day, though, Rabbi Yossi would say, I'm going home. I don't want to be studying with this tutor. I don't want to be here. And he tells him, Chachim Abdu Yosach, well, I made you into a wise person. I gave you a golden crown on your head, meaning I'm giving you such honor. You know, you've been ordained as a rabbi already. You're being honored by the great sages of the generation. We're treating you with such dignity and such respect. And you want to go back home and forget it all? So he says, okay, I'll stay. So he stays, and he learns, and he grows in his learning, and he becomes a great person himself. To the point where he went to yeshiva, and he was speaking, and people confused him for his father, for his great father. So he became, it sounds like, as great as his father, just about. So that's the story. And then, so that's about all we know about him. So the question is, what do we learn from this story? It's an interesting story, but what motivated him to change, to do tshuva? And here it's very backwards, because it's not like, okay, he did tshuva, then he became known as a rabbi. They called him rabbi first, they gave him honor and respect, and then he decided to do tshuva. It seems like we kind of flipped it over on its head. How does this work? And the answer is that sometimes we have to live up to the high goals we set for ourselves. You know, if we look at ourselves as lowly people, so I have nothing to strive towards. But if we realize, no, I'm a great person. I'm not living up to my greatness, but I am a great person. Look, I could be on the level of my father. I could be on the level of this rabbi. I could be great. You know, we're all Jews, and we're all children of the Avos and the Imahos, of the patriarchs and the matriarchs. We're called Hashem's children. Ban matem Hashem lokeichem. We're all Hashem's children. That's a pretty high title to live up to. That's a very lofty title. If I'm regarded so highly, if God calls me His child, and God says, "No, you're Melechus Kohanim, you're a nation of Kohanim, you're a holy nation," so how can I live up to that title? He said, "No, like they told Rabbi Yossi, they said, we've already called you Rabbi. We've given you a crown on your head, as it were. We've given you this honor. So how can't you live up to that? You know, you're just going to leave it all behind, but you have so much potential within. You could do so much. You could be so great. You have to work towards it." And this is spoken about a lot in the world of chinuch. When you're educating children, the children will live up to the titles you give them. And if you label a kid, you're a bad kid, so he'll be a bad kid. If you label a kid, you're a great kid, he'll be a great kid. You know, you want to always look at the positive in a child and try to bring out, label him with the positive traits that he has, because in that way, he'll live up to those positive traits. So they label, you become great sometimes based on the reputation that people think you have, or based on where you could go, that you live up to that reputation. If you think you can do it, then you can do it. If others regard you so highly and think you can accomplish, so then you know yourself, no, I can accomplish. People think highly of me, it must be that I can actually be a good person, because people think highly of me. So everyone has a reputation to live up to. And in simple, because we're Jews, we're God's children, we're the Am Kadosh, the holy nation, and this is what God labels us to be. So how can we not live up to the expectations? Now, if we're not living life with that title in mind, so then we're just not living up to our title. But the title means that we can accomplish that. We could be there. We could certainly be perceived and live life as a child of God, even if we don't feel we're living that life right now. So that was the secret that they utilized to help Rabbi Yossi do tshuva. They didn't say, okay, we're going to try to teach him first, and afterwards, if he does well, we'll give him respect, and we'll give him honor, and we'll call him rabbi. Rather, they said, okay, you're a rabbi. That's who you are. You know why? Because your father was great, and your grandfather was great, and you have it within you. So you're a rabbi. Now, you don't think you're a rabbi? Well, give it some time. You'll see how great you can be. That's what they told him, and he lived up to it. You know, because they gave him that honor and respect, he lived up to that reputation, and he became great. So that's also a lesson we can all take from Yom Kippur. We know we have within ourselves. It's all there. We know greatness is within because we're God's nation. And God told us that you're all great. You're all a holy nation. You're all my children. So we look at ourselves and think, okay, I'm not quite there. I'm not living a life like that. But that's what I'm expected to do, and that's where I should be, and that's how people view me. So if that's the point, then we can get there. That's very encouraging to us, and it's a secret that we can use, that if people look at me as so great, I better live up to that reputation that I have. So that's the story of Rabbi Yossi ben Rabbi Eliezer ben Rabbi Shimon. Now I'm going to do one more story here. It's a little bit longer story. This is about Rabbi Eliezer ben Hyrcanus. He's the name Rabbi Eliezer that you hear about in the Gemara or in the Midrash. That's Rabbi Eliezer. This is him. And there's actually a whole Midrash which he composed called Pirkei de Rabbi Eliezer. And the introduction to that Midrash gives us his background. And he's somebody also that grew up in more of a simple lifestyle and then became great. So the story goes as follows. So let's read the whole story and then we'll go back and discuss the lessons. The story says that Rabbi Eliezer ben Hyrcanus initially was working on the farm of his father. His father was a very wealthy man. He owned a lot of land. He was plowing on the farm. And they were first plowing, he had to plow on the very tough, difficult land, you know, the rocky, the tough soil. And he was sitting on a chair and he was crying. He was 28 years old at this point. He wasn't like a kid. He was crying. He was crying on a chair. And his father said to him, "Why are you crying? Is it because you don't like plowing on the tough land? Well, I'll move you to the nicer land to plow on. You're my kid. I'll let the workers plow the tough land. You can plow the nicer land." So they moved him to the nicer land. And he still was crying. So he said to him, "Why are you crying? Do you not like plowing on the uneven, on the easy way? Is that a problem for you?" So he said, "No, that's not the problem. That's not why I'm crying." So he said, "Okay, why are you crying?" He said, "Because I want to learn Torah. I don't want to be working on the farm. I want to go and I want to learn Torah." His father said, "What do you mean? You're already 28 years old. You might learn Torah. You know what? Go get married. Have kids. You know, send them off to school. You don't have to do it yourself. You're already too old for that. So for 2 weeks, he was distressed over this. He didn't want to eat. For 2 weeks, he didn't want to eat because he was so distressed over the situation. And then at that point, it says that Eliyahu HaNavi appeared to him. He said to him, Ben Hyrcanus. He said to him, son of Hyrcanus, why are you crying? He's still crying 2 weeks later. And he said, because I want to learn Torah. So Eliyahu HaNavi told him, well, if you want to learn Torah, then go learn Torah. Go to Yerushalayim, and you'll go to the great Gadol Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, and you can become his student. So he didn't tell his father, I guess. You know, he could be said goodbye to his father, but his father did not give him his blessing, that's for sure. And he left Yerushalayim, and he went to Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai was the Nasi. He was really the head of the whole generation. And he sat in front of him, and he was crying. He's still crying. And he said to him, why are you crying? He said, well, because I want to learn Torah. He said, well, who's your father? Who are you? He didn't tell him. Commentaries say he didn't tell him who he was because he was concerned he'd get special treatment because his father was a wealthy man. He didn't want special treatment. So he didn't tell him who he was. He said, did you ever learn how to say Shema, or to daven, or to say Birkas HaMazon, to bench? He said, no, I never did. No, he really did not know much at this point. He was pretty ignorant. So he tells him, okay, stand up and I'll teach you all three of those things. So he teaches him Shema, teaches him how to daven, teaches him how to bench. Okay, so Yochanan ben Zakkai says, okay, I'm done. I taught him what he needs to know. So Rabbi Yosef sits down again and he starts crying. Right? He's crying again. And he said to him, why are you crying? He says, I want to learn more. That's not what I want to know. I want to know much more Torah than that. So he tells him, okay, I'll teach you two halachas a week. Two halachas a day. So every day, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai taught Rabbi Eliezer two halachas, and he would review them and make sure he knew them really, really well. He did it for 8 days, and he still wasn't eating anything. At this point, I guess he was busy learning, he wasn't really eating. And to the point where his stomach was getting sick, and he had a bad breath, as the Midrash says. And he sat down again. So he went before Yochanan ben Zakkai, and he made him stand up. And then he sat down and he started crying again. So he said, why are you crying? He said that, because you're treating me like I'm, you know, a disgusting person. Like a mukashkin, like I'm covered in boils. Why are you making me stand there and else is sitting? So he says to him, no, just like I smelled your sick, bad breath, so too I want to be able to smell the beauty of your Torah learning from Shemayim. So then he asks him, well, tell me again, who's your father? I still don't know who you are. He says, my father is Hyrcanus. He says, oh, your father is a wealthy man. I know Hyrcanus. Why'd you tell me? He says, because I know who you are, I want you to come eat in my house. I'll take care of you. So he says, no, you already ate. Don't worry. So Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai goes and asks his host, did you really eat? Yeah, he didn't really eat anything. So he says, you're coming to my house to eat. So he says, he brings him to his house. He feeds him. He would eat there every single day. And he would teach him, etc. Eventually, the story goes that all of the wealthy people of Israel came up to Yerushalayim, I guess, for some sort of event or meeting. I don't know what it was for. And his father came along as well. And his brother said, why don't you go up to Yerushalayim, find our brother Eliezer, and I want you to cut him out of the will. Why? Because they thought he was just trying to get out of working on the farm. They didn't realize what he was doing in Yerushalayim. They never supported him going to learn Torah. And they thought he wanted to have an easy lifestyle and no longer have to work hard. So said, he's not putting in anything, you know, in our estate, so cut him out of the estate. So he gets to Yerushalayim, and the story goes that, you know, all these great sages sit down to teach Torah, and all these wealthy people are there listening, and Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai has Rabbi Eliezer get up and teach Torah to everybody there. And what he spoke about was, he said an incredible shiur. It was an amazing talk that he gave. And then they said, who is this guy? He said, it's Eliezer. And then so his father said, my son, that's my son. Oh my gosh, I didn't realize my son was such a great person. So he takes him and he embraces him. Eventually he gives him all the money in the will and cuts out the other brothers. that's basically how the story ends. But then he says, I don't want your money. All I want to do is learn Torah. He doesn't want to accept all the money. So those are side points in the story. But that's the story of Rabbi Elazar ben Hyrcanus. And he became, again, one of the greatest sages that we have in the Gemara. He started off at age 28. He didn't even know how to say Shema. Now, it's interesting. Even very secular Jews nowadays, they do know how to say Shema. He didn't even know Shema at age 28. So what can we learn from his story? What can we learn from his tshuva? So number one, we find that he spent a lot of time crying, right? We do see that. Now what do we learn from that? Now he felt unsettled in life. He felt there's something I'm lacking in my life, and I can't put a finger on it necessarily. I'm not sure what it is, but I don't feel I'm living the lifestyle I want to be living right now. And it bothered him. Now many of us, we feel that way at times, but it doesn't quite bother us in the same way. We kind of like brush it off. Okay, you know, maybe I should be doing things differently. Maybe I should be acting in a different way. Maybe there's things in life I can't improve. Maybe I feel a little unsettled in who I am, but whatever. Maybe we push it aside. Yeah, Beelzer didn't push it aside. He said, no, if I'm feeling unsettled, something is wrong in my life, and it hit him like a ton of bricks, and he started crying. And every time that something came up, he didn't feel he was quite there, he became emotional about it. The idea of crying is that you feel it's so important to you, it's so close to you, that it makes you emotional. Things that aren't really relevant to us, we don't cry about. Things that are relevant to us, we cry about. So for him, the fact that his life was unsettled, he felt that he wasn't living the lifestyle he wanted, it wasn't just like, okay, whatever, I'll worry about it later on. It got in his way, and it bothered him to the point that it made him feel emotional and cry. And that's an emotion that one should have. You know, if we feel that we're not living life as we want to be living, it should bother us, because you know, we have one life to live, and we have to live it the right way, and we don't want to spend time in life living ways we don't want to be living. So he felt that, he started crying. Then it says that, his father thought, well, maybe you're crying because you don't like where you're plowing, I'll move you to a different job. And at that point, Eliezer did not say anything to him about learning Torah, and commentators explain because he wasn't exactly sure why he was unsettled. I mean, he didn't know at that point what was bothering him. He said, maybe he's right, maybe I still like my job, so I'll switch jobs. But he switched jobs and he still was unsettled. So he knew there was something deeper that was driving him. At that point he realized, I really want to go learn Torah, and that's what's bothering me. So all of us, even if we feel unsettled, don't know why, if life is not, you know, if you don't feel in life they're doing as you want to be doing, we have to explore why that is. And we also didn't immediately jump to conclusions. He said, okay, I'm not sure why, I'm going to give other things a chance, but he has to figure out, what is it about my life that's not quite settled? And he realizes it's because I need to go learn Torah. His father then tells him, but you're 28 years old. You're too old for that. So obviously that if people come to discourage us from trying to change or to grow, the answer has to be it's never too late to change, never too late to grow. Now even at the very last, as we learned last week, even very last moments in life mean something. And even though there was naysayers around saying you're too old for this, you're already 28 years old, just move along, go get married, have kids, we'll let them learn Torah when they get older. He said, no, this is my life, this is what I need, and it doesn't matter how old I am. If this is what I need to do to grow and to change and be a good person, this is what I'm going to do. So he continues crying for 2 weeks, doesn't eat, and then it says Eliyahu HaNavi appeared to him. Now this is a fascinating thing, because we picture Eliyahu HaNavi appearing to people who are very righteous, pious people, people who spend time fasting and doing all sorts of, you know, very, very spiritual things. He was a simple farmer who was ignorant, and he merited to have a conversation with Eliyahu HaNavi. And why was that? So commentaries point out a very important thing. It's not because somebody learned Torah so much, he gets such privileges, but it's because he has such a sincere desire to learn, that already brought him up to a great level where Eliyahu HaNavi speak with him. Meaning the desires that we have within, to have those dreams and aspirations, are so significant that Eliyahu HaNavi himself would say that even though you're nowhere near a great person at this point, because I see where your heart is, I see where you want to go, I'm willing to speak with you and help you out. So we have to ask ourselves as well, do we have dreams, goals, and aspirations as Jews or not? Because those are extremely important. Those help us get where we need to go. And when Hashem sees that those are our goals and our dreams, even if we're not quite there, that gives us a lot of merit, because He knows within your heart that's where you want to go. Very often, you know, even if, you know, it takes time to actually get somewhere, but if we know our goals, we get there eventually and work towards them. I would think one of the major activities that we can involve ourselves in on Yom Kippur is not just, you know, the specific tshuva, but to get our goals in life straight. Where am I headed? You know, next Yom Kippur, what should I look like next Yom Kippur? How should I be different? How do I want to change? Do I have aspirations and goals as a person, as a Jew? Many people have goals in their material life. You know, I want to be able to get this promotion, make this much money, buy this car, buy this house. But do we have goals in our spiritual life? You know, I want to be able to cut back on Lashon Hara and increase my observance of Shabbos and daven better and do more chesed. Do we have those goals or not? Those also be goals. And those goals, Eliezer had a goal to learn Torah. He didn't even decide to go yet. But because he had that dream, and he had that desire, that deep burning desire to learn Torah, that's why Eliyahu HaNavi came to him. And that's a very important thing. So then what happened? So he goes up to Yerushalayim and he meets Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, and he says to him, okay, I'll teach you three basic things, Shema, Davening, and Birchas HaMazon. So why did he do that? He felt, okay, this kid, he's a farmer boy, he's ignorant, he wants to know basics of being a Jew, he doesn't want to sit here and learn more and more, he wants to learn the basics and go back home. That's what he figured. And he taught him the basics, and he still is crying. Why is he still crying? Because he didn't let that suffice. Many of us would say, okay, you know, I had a goal to learn Torah. I know some basics right now. You know, I can check the box. I have now studied Torah. And I'll go back to my regular lifestyle. Rabbi Elazar said, no, I can't suffice with that. I know there's more to know. There's more to do. There's more to accomplish. The sky's the limit. You know, I can do more. I can learn more. I can grow more. So at that point, he didn't just say, okay. He was still crying. He said, no, that's not what I need. I need more and more and more. I want to be able to learn more Torah, grow as a Jew to the best I possibly can. So at that point, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, he said, okay, so stick with me and I'll teach you daily. And that's how he started growing into who he was. Later on in the story, this is actually a part that I skipped. I'm going to go back to it for a second. So later on in the story, it says that when all of these great wealthy people came to Yerushalayim and they all sat down to listen to a shir, so Yochanan ben Zakkai got up to give the shir, and he said to Rabbi Eliezer, I want you to give the shir instead. I want you to get up and speak. He said, no, I don't want to do it. And to find you the exact quote here, let me find it. I can't find the exact quote, but basically here it is. So he said to him, well, maybe you're embarrassed to speak in front of me, so I leave the room. Now, if you're sitting there with your teacher, with your rabbi, sometimes you're a little bit, you know, anxious to speak in front of somebody greater than you. So Yochanan said, okay, I'll leave the room and then you can speak. And there's also a lesson there, because even though he had grown to be so great, he still had humility. He has to say that, you know, as we grow and as we're able and as we become greater people, we also look around to those who helped us and say that, you know, I still have recognition of who's around me. I'm a humble person. Rabbi Elazar at this point was very great. He had grown to be a very, very great sage. But he still had this humility around his teacher that made him feel anxious to speak in his presence. Even though, you know, he had excelled to the point that he certainly could speak in front of his teacher, and he would impress his teacher if he spoke in front of his teacher. But he had that humility. The halacha is that even somebody who becomes, you know, a great Talmud Chacham, a Gadol Hador, even that Rebbe you taught him in kindergarten, the Aleph Beis, he's still regarded as a Rebbe. You can't say, okay, you don't know anything. You just know how to teach me Aleph Beis. You taught me a few psukim, but I know the entire Torah. The answer is, yeah, but how'd you get there? If you didn't know your Aleph and your Beis, you didn't know the Bereishis, then how could you wouldn't be the person that you are? So there has to always be humility. Those who helped us get to where we are, if we do grow and we do achieve in life, we have to always look at those who got us there and say, I feel humble in your presence because I couldn't have gotten there without you. And then we have at the end, so his father comes to listen to the shir. He's very impressed. He says, who is this speaker? He says, it's your son. My son? Wow, I didn't know he was so great. And then his father, Hyrcanus said, fortunate am I that such a person came from me. This is my child. And to me, this is actually a very important lesson that people have to take into mind sometimes. You hear very often, let's say you have somebody who is a Baal Tshuva, really they came from a secular background and became Torah observant. So that person often, when they're making those big moves in the beginning, the friends, family, discourage it. And they say, you know, it's a little bit drastic, it's an extreme lifestyle, how can you do that? But give it a few years later, usually those friends, those family members are actually very, very proud of them and respect them for it. His father initially said, what do you mean? You're 20 years old, why should you go? It doesn't make any sense. But then years later, his father says, wow, I'm very proud of my son for what he did. You know, when people get discouraged, and that's an extreme example, but even, you know, in small things, you know, with our friends, we act in a certain way, but we don't like how we act. We don't change that. So your friends say, you know, really, you want to do that? It's a little bit too extreme. You know, you're going to ruin the way that we interact. Why would you want to act that way? But after the fact, they respect it usually. There's the initial discouragement that the people will give us, the cynicism, you know, the fear of change. You know, we don't like when our friends and family change around us because it makes us nervous. But when they're changing for the positive, when they're trying to become greater Jews and greater people, After the fact, usually you say, I'm very proud of what they've done. You know, it made me nervous in the beginning, but I'm very proud of it. So Hyrcanus, Eliezer's father, he said that, you know, even though I discouraged him in the beginning, you know what, look what came of this. He did great, he's an amazing person, and I'm very, very proud of what he's become. And that's the one, so lessons of tshuva are, don't be nervous about those around you who are the naysayers. You know, people who are cynics around us and say, no, you can't do it, it doesn't make sense. You've tried it before, you're too old, it's too much, it's too extreme. There's so many different complaints we'll get. But ultimately, even those naysayers eventually will respect you for what you've done. And I think 99 of 100 times, that's the truth. You know, usually the naysayers do respect the changes that are made because they're all positive, they're all for the good. They all make us into better people. So these are all lessons of tshuva, you know, contemplations, inspiration. Hashem wants us to grow, Hashem wants us to change. In Shemona Esrei, the bracha about tshuva, it concludes, Baruch Ata Hashem HaRotzeh B'Tshuva, Hashem desires tshuva. We don't use that term for anything else. We don't say that Hashem desires that we have health or we have money or that we have peace. It's HaRotzeh B'Tshuva. Hashem desires tshuva. Because Hashem, as we say, we'll repeat in Yom Kippur, many times Hashem does not desire us to be punished or to die. Hashem wants us to live and just to do the right thing. That's what Hashem wants out of us. We have to do our part and begin the journey, begin the process. But Hashem is there to help us along the way. This entire period of the year, Elul, Aser Simei Tshuva, Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, these are all opportunities that Hashem has given us that I will be there to assist you if you make the moves. You set the path, you set the goals, ignore the naysayers, you set where you want to go, devote yourself, and I'll get you there. Yom Kippur is a day that has a special power to help us out. If we have those, hopefully by now we all have goals in mind for the coming year. And if we don't have them yet, we have a few days to develop those goals. But if we have those goals, there's a special power on that day that through our tshuva, through our davening, through our sincerity, so Hashem says, I will help you along. A resolution made in Yom Kippur is a very powerful resolution. You know, we make resolutions all the time. But there is actually an idea that a resolution made at the time of the Iwa is something that's much more powerful and hopefully will stick with us much more. The term ne'ilah, one translation of ne'ilah means to lock in, no one else to close the door. And we're trying to lock in. Hopefully we've had lots of ideas floating in our head the past month of what we can do this year to become better. But Yom Kippur is the day that we lock it all in for the coming year. And when we lock in our positive changes, God locks in our positive decrees. Everything should turn out positive for this year. So that should be our goal. So we've given a lot of examples of tshuva, a lot of different, I guess, highlights and thoughts of how one could do tshuva, what are the challenges of tshuva, what inspires tshuva, what motivates tshuva. So everyone will pick out what they need in their own life based on all our discussions we've had. But ultimately, we're trying just to get to the point where we're always growing, we're setting goals for ourselves, you know, we're God's children, which means we have a high level to live up to. We set those goals, we make the practical resolutions for the coming year, and you know, God willing, He'll respond, you know, with a positive outcome for our coming year. Wish everyone a Gemar Chasima Tova. Wish you sealed for a good year. And God willing, next week we'll talk about Sukkot, you know, before Sukkot.